I'm joined in the studio with Murray State University President Dr. Bob Davies. It's glad to have you back up here at WKMS.
It's great to be back here. It seems like I was just here last week. Oh, wait, I was here just last week during the fundraising drive, the spring drive. First, and on that note, I want to congratulate WKMS and all of the staff and volunteers for surpassing the goal of $140,000. I've been told that this is one of the larger ones in the history of WKMS, and so very excited times for WKMS, and the outpouring of public support for this fine asset to the institution is very, very important. So again, congratulations, and thank you to all those who participated during that time frame. And on that note, too, I got to say, what a beautiful time on campus. I was walking over today from Wells Hall and talking with students who are excited. At this time, as you know, they're excited because summer's around the corner, graduation's around the corner. A little bit of fear and trepidation in that those reports that and those papers that were due, they had 16 weeks to do, are now all of a sudden due within a week or two, and finals are right around the corner. But again, there's that air of excitement, that air of accomplishment, and something very important to be part of on a college campus. And then plus, it's just beautiful outside. Absolutely gorgeous. This is just absolutely stunning. Kathy Callahan from the Department Chair for History sent me some photos from the Arboretum over the weekend, and I post them on Facebook. It's just glorious, and I encourage everybody in this mad rush, in this time with 2 weeks of classes to go and finals and graduation all upon us, to really take a moment, and literally in Dr. Callahan's, where she took pictures of some of the flowers, take time to smell the flowers and really enjoy what we have here in Murray, Callaway County, in West Kentucky.
The campus footprint is expanding, and there was recently a dedication for the Science Resource Center and Gateway. Can you paint a picture of what the space looks like?
Sure. Well, we had the opportunity to the engineering and physics building is near completion. They're on the final pathway, so to speak, and had the opportunity to tour that on last Friday, and then also do the dedication for Dr. Bogus, and also acknowledge the enormous generosity from Dr. Jesse Jones. But walking through that facility and seeing architecturally how they are enhancing the Institute of Engineering. The Institute of Engineering, again, need to give great kudos to Danny Claiborne and Dean Cobb and the faculty in those areas for providing leadership of taking engineering programs that are traditionally in their own silos and weaving them together, which allows enormous pathways for our students and entering the university, as well as discovering what type of engineering they wanted to do, and to freely and seamlessly go in between those in those disciplines. At many universities, it requires a great deal of changing of courses and everything else. We've been able to integrate those here at Murray State University. And then also in integrating them, we've created a much stronger program for our students because they're becoming knowledgeable in all the facets of engineering versus their own specificity. And the building just enhances that through the openness, through the windows, through the high bay lab that they have, where all of the different disciplines will have areas within their own classroom, but the windows that look down upon the lab so they can see how their part would add to the ultimate completion of a project or anything along those lines. And just going throughout the building, again, having those openness, having the number of windows inside the facility is absolutely outstanding. The Student Resource Center is part of that effort, where students from all the disciplines will be able to come together. They will be able to get advice from mentors, work on their communication, and work on their presentations and have that videoed and taped, and so they can really expand on those areas. And it also gives kudos and respect to Dr. Bogus, who, before student-centered was popular, before experiential learning was popular, before students get involved in research, before interdisciplinary study works were all popular, he was doing it. And so, again, to pay homage to him and his leadership and his foresight was just absolutely incredible. And to see how that continues today with all of our programs at the university.
Murray State recently received some scholarship funding to enhance diversity efforts on campus. Can you outline the Johnny Green Diversity Scholarships, who Johnny Green is and why he donated?
Sure. Dr. Johnny Green is a a former attendee of Murray State University. He actually attended here on a track scholarship. At the end of his academic career, he transferred to another university to finish his career in a very specific niche, chiropractic, which we obviously do not have. But we prepared him so well that when he went to the chiropractic school, he was head and shoulders above all of the other students in his class, and he really acknowledged that. And he has gone on and done amazing things and has done extremely well for himself business-wise. And this provided him an opportunity to give back to Murray State, to give back to the programs that supported him while he was a student here, and to acknowledge all the mentors in faculty as well as staff for what they're doing, and also understanding that diversity and providing scholarship funds for high-achieving underrepresented students is an important part of our strategic plan, and part a very important part of our ethos, if you will. And he provided those scholarships to five individuals, $2,000 each. They're very noble individuals. They do a lot obviously successful in the classroom, but they're also very participatory within our campus culture, volunteering their time, members of several sort of organizations, working with the community. And so it was really exciting that Johnny Green acknowledged the importance of those attributes beyond just the classroom and understanding how it creates the whole person. And so for him to come back and support those students was amazing. He saw what Murray State's about. He saw what we're trying to do. And I'm sure he will continue to support us in many, many ways. Dynamic individual, very much a very positive person. And I look forward to working with him in the future.
Somebody who many WKMS listeners might be familiar with is Dr. John Dressler. He's the host of a classical encore here at WKMS. He's also a professor at Murray State University in the music department and was recently honored with the 2017 Distinguished Professor Award.
This is a neat award. It's solely based on your skills as an educator, as a teacher, and the connections you make with the students. It is done through the Alumni Association. It was established in 1964 or thereabouts. They accept nominations from students. They have to be nominated from a current student, and they receive a plethora of nominations. And then they go through due diligently and kind of ferret out the awardee, and they provide them with the award, which is a golden apple, which I think is kind of clever. And then also a $1,000 cash award goes along with that as well. Professor Wan was last year's recipient. This year, as you mentioned, it was John Dressler. And again, it's just acknowledging the importance of teaching, acknowledge the importance of being engaged with our students and providing them the opportunities to excel in their chosen discipline. We always try to do this in front of a classroom, and so we arranged to give the award to John Dressler in front of his class. I also have to go back a little bit. Last year, we did the same thing with Professor Wan, and when we went into his classroom, all the students were taking a test. And also just the day before, Professor Wan was dealing with some other issues. And so when he saw the president come in, he thought, oh my God, this is the day I'm getting fired. But no, we were giving him the award. So that was a little bit funny. This year was a little bit on that same note. It was the same week as a large conference. And at the last moment, Mr. Dressler canceled his class because 90% of his students were at the conference. And so we go into this classroom and it's empty. So we go up to his office, and all of a sudden he's thinking to as I walk into his office and say, hey, we just went to your classroom. So again, a similar type of circumstance. He's like, oh my God, the president's mad. He's like, canceled class. And just the opposite. It was an opportunity to acknowledge his outstanding teaching, and he was extremely appreciative. And I know to this day, just talking to him over the weekend at the faculty awards, right before the weekend at the faculty awards dinner, he's still on cloud nine because of this award. It means that much to him.
The first ever All Campus Give campaign exceeded expectations recently, and this effort raised more than $15,000 to support experiential learning opportunities on campus. How did the All Campus Give campaign get started, and what kind of learning opportunities do you anticipate with these funds?
Sure. Well, the All Campus Give, it started with, building off an enormous, important tradition at Murray State, the All Campus Sing, and really how to garner involvement throughout the not only current students, but more importantly, or just as importantly, with alumni and individuals who may not be able to participate in all-campus sing, but can participate in a different way. The Alumni Association worked directly with Sigma Alpha Iota's team and made sure that they didn't want, because also all-campus sing is a fundraising for their philanthropic program as well. And so they wanted to make sure that they were working in hand, in concert, no pun intended, but in concert together, hand in glove together, to really enhance both efforts. And I think that was achieved. The all-campus give was really targeting more to alumni who participate in the all-campus sing as viewers, not necessarily as participants. And it was something to garner support and really playing off the fact that we want to be able to provide our students opportunities to engage, to put what they're learning in the classroom into the real world. And to be honest, the all-campus sing is kind of like that. It forces our students to do something very much typically outside of their norm. Most of the people who participate in all-campus sing are not singers. They're members of fraternities and sororities and clubs and organizations and athletic teams and et cetera. And now they are in a group project where they must do something that's going to stretch their own comfort zone and have members of the group perform their duties and also support one another. Experiential learning is very similar along that same pathway, and that was one of the things that we put forward. The funds will be used to help with the new experiential learning center, the EDGE program that we have. It will provide, they will be able to use some of these funds for scholarships, for study abroad, and internships, and provide funds to students who need funds to go to an internship in New York City or wherever the case may be. It will help us also provide funds to making sure that the programs are appropriately advertised and those type of things. So again, something very, very important. The all-campus give was also brought in some competition. I was pleased and proud to give the first place trophy to Phi Kappa Alpha. They just outgave at the last moment the Lambda Chi Alpha fraternity, which was a lot of fun to see all the people interact along those lines as well. And then third place went to Hart Residential College. So to have two fraternities and a residential college really competing to the very end was pretty fun and exciting. I'm sure it's something that we will continue because as a university, we will continue to need private dollars to support the efforts that we're doing. The public dollars we receive, the tuition dollars, the state appropriation, those type of things are being stretched very thin to provide the base level. Where we will excel, the funds that we need to provide those programs that will allow us to excel, to go well and beyond the minimum, will be coming from private support. So this is just one more way to help with that process. You know, very similar to WKMS's fund drive. You know, we need to have those private dollars to do what we do so very well.
The Board of Regents recently approved a 5% increase in tuition and fees for the next academic year, but the percentage increase will be sort of split in two paths. 3% will generate an increase in revenue, and the other 2% will be used for one-time expenditures. What are some of the one-time expenditures?
Let me just go back a little bit and talk about the entire process, and that's very important. The CPE is responsible for setting and approving the actual recommendations from the Board of Regents. What they do is provide a cap to give us guidance and what they would accept or not accept in terms of tuition increases. Our goal is to remain as affordable as possible. That is our goal. Increasing tuition is something that I don't see as a fun part of my job or anything along those lines. Unfortunately, it's a necessary evil. We are at a time, and this is not new. This is not anyone should fall out of their chair and say, oh my God, I did not know this. Public universities are receiving less public support for our students, for our programs, for our universities. As we are growing and those type of things and excelling in many different ways, we face fiscal pressures, just inflationary costs, just costs for technology, insurance costs, legal costs, utility costs, all those different types of things go up. We used to receive funds for the maintenance and operation of our facilities. We no longer receive funds for our maintenance of operations of our facilities. That's one of the hidden budget cuts that have occurred over the last 10 years. And so all of these type of things are forcing us to all universities, and this has been, again, over time, 10 to 15 years, so this is nothing new, that the percentage of funds used to support the universities used to be 70-30, 70% from the state, 30% from the students and their families. That is now flipped. We are 30-70, and we will see 30% from the state, 70% from the students and their families. And unfortunately, just due to several factors, that 70% will grow to 75% and probably 80%, if not more. In establishing tuition, the most important part is not only the rate, but also the trajectory of the rate year after year after year after year. A lot of individuals believe that, oh, just do 0% for 1 year and then figure it out. Well, if you do zero or very low percent 1 year and then you're faced with a significant reduction in state appropriation or increased cost, i.e. pension, the next year you got to do 7 or 8%. And then you back it back down to 3% for the next year. And then you go back up to 6%. And then you go back down to 2%. And then you go back. That fluctuation is what causes more consternation among families and students, more than just gradual increases. So this year, what CPE did with the consent and consult with the governor and legislators is to look at tuition in two ways. First, what is needed to cover the, in their estimation, the needed fixed cost increases for universities? Nothing new, nothing special, just those inflationary areas. And also the goal, too, was to take into consideration what some of the universities will be receiving in extra state appropriation. Two universities this year are Northern Kentucky and Western Kentucky. The third part was also to get our tuition levels among the comprehensive universities closer together. There's a big gap between the tuition level at Western Kentucky University, Northern Kentucky University, and Kentucky State, us, and Morehead State. There's just a big gap. And they want us to get a little bit closer, and with performance funding coming in the years to come, that's going to be even more important because the dollars will be normalized out. One of the key arguments Western and Northern put forward is that they receive less state appropriation per student than, say, us, which is actually, I will not dispute that because it's true, but they also have a much higher tuition. And so if we're all of a sudden going to be receiving the state normalized state appropriation, our tuition levels must come into play as well. And so Western and Northern had a much lower cap on the initial fixed cost. Ours was 3%. Western's was 1%. The governor, through discussions with me and many others, understands the role of tuition and not to help the fluctuations that go in pass. So he recommended, and it was accepted by CPE, that we have a 2% offset for future increases that will be forthcoming in the next biennium. Those increases could be a decrease in state appropriation, an increase in the pension liability that we pay. Last year, our pension liability increase was $1.3 million. Or a combination thereof. What they did is looked at the last 10 years' pension increases, calculated that a 2% tuition increase would cover part of that, a big part of it, but only part of it. Therefore, they put in an additional 2% level for us, so a total of 5%, with the complete and understanding that those funds, or that tuition, those funds generated from those tuitions, would be things that will be counted out in the years to come. So if we wanted to, we could actually say, okay, we're going to put those on reoccurring expenses this year. But then when the tuition, but then next year when pension increases go up or state appropriation goes down or a combination thereof, that 2% that we just earmarked would have to be reduced from our budget because that is the process of that tuition dollars coming in next year. So this is kind of a pay it forward and to level out the trajectory. Financial management, fiduciary responsibilities, what we will be doing is holding that the funds generated from that 2%, which is an additional $1.1 million in abeyance for projects of a one-time nature. What we'd be looking at, for example, is to initiate a fund to replace the electrical grid for Murray State University. We would be looking at single possible renovations within our facilities is another opportunity that we would be looking at. Those are the things that, again, those one-time expenditures, those are the things that we would be looking at with the full understanding that in the next year, that $1.1 million would become part of our base tuition, then become part of our base of our reoccurring expenditures. So this year, as we do our budgeting, we're actually doing two sets, if you want to call it that. One set is the reoccurring expenditures, and for that, we will be using the 3% increase, which is a net after our discounts and everything else of an increase of $2.2 million or thereabouts for our university. When we look at total revenues, because of the projected decline in our senior and junior classes of next year, along with the continued decline in graduate programs, we are projecting a difference of $4.5 million in recurring revenues from based on those three factors. Again, a smaller junior class, a smaller senior class, and a much smaller graduate program class level. We've also included $1.8 million in priorities and fixed cost increases. As I mentioned before, some of these fixed cost increases include liability insurance, legal services, utilities. It's becoming more difficult to acquire properties. So we did a slight increase in there. Priorities, investing in our people. Very important priority for us. COLA increases, giving our lowest employees up to a higher standard, those type of things. And that's also part of that $1.8 million. With that, we needed to make some budget changes and reallocations. And what we tried to do is do as most of these at the highest, at what we call the macro level, things that the university can do more efficiently, more effectively, that would not have the direct impact on students. These include, for example, vacancy recapture rates. We've had some of our positions have gone open longer and everything else, so we are not increasing the percentage of vacancy recapture, but we are as budgeting more aggressively in that area, and that will help us out. We budgeted very aggressively for the FLSA expenditures this year. The managers and everyone else has been very, very prudent with overtime, so we're going to be able to recoup some savings at that level, and that would not impact students' learning or anything along those lines. We're paying off an ESCO debt that will save us $500,000. Nobody's going to realize that. Those type of things have all added into our discussion point. We've asked the deans to budget more aggressively with some of the revenues that they're receiving, new revenues that they're receiving because of the change in the way that we calculate web classes and the fees along those lines. These are new monies. These are monies that they have not had before. These are it's $522,000 that by budgeting these dollars as part of their ongoing operations will save immensely. It does not change their overall budget. It does not require a reduction. It is taking these new funds and saying instead of just putting them in abeyance and using them as things come up, to actually be proactive and say, okay, we're going to use these funds to fund these areas. That also saves $522,000. With all of those type of things, and I have to give credit to Jackie Dudley and those areas of spreading all of these things out in many areas of which will not have an impact to the academic enterprise, will not have an impact on our students. The students will not realize this. We were able to get to a point where just less than 1% of the expendable budget needed to be reallocated. In doing this whole process, we asked all the vice presidents and deans to work on scenarios of 3, 5, 7, 10 kind of budget scenarios of reductions. And so we were able to take the lowest level and went back to the deans and vice presidents around and said, at the lowest level, here's where we are. Where can we save, again, roughly 1% of a budget line? And they were able to work their magic and do some very creative things. Some of the units saw areas where they could actually increase revenue a little bit, so they did that. So we were able to manage those out and change some things that, again, students really won't notice. I'll point to, for example, University Advancement that went well above their quote-unquote 1% mark, where they're going to be saving about 2% of their budget. And that is the removal, if you want to call it that, of an offset press. We have an offset press that's old, that is magically staying together by the ingenuity of three or four gentlemen who have worked on that web press for many, many years. They are literally holding it together with paper clips, bailing wire, duct tape, and ingenuity, blood, sweat, and tears, and they have done an amazing job of keeping that together. But that's also a service that we provide that, in the analysis, only 8 or 9 print jobs need to be done on an offset press. 8 or 9 in the entire year. And only one of those is time sensitive. And so what we've been able to do is we're going to sell the offset press. We're no longer going to service it. We're no longer going to use it. Those 9 jobs or 8 or 9 jobs will be outsourced to a printer. There's one in Louisville. There's one in Paducah that they may use. There's one in Nashville that they may use. And the turnaround time is fairly quick as offset press is going, but we don't have to worry about it breaking down. We can take the individuals who are working on the offset press, retrain them to work on a new digital press, and we'll be investing in a new digital press. So even with the investment, they'll be saving a goodly sum. No positions eliminated, better service. The individuals that work on that website, the offset press, you know, this is their baby. They're like a parent about ready to send their son or daughter to college. They're excited, a little sad, but excited, a little sad, but overall excited because, again, we've been able to be more efficient. They'll be able to be more effective and we'll be able to send that off. other reductions and things along those lines. Without getting into some of the specifics, there's a couple programs that have very small enrollments. The deans are going to do some things to make it more efficient, utilize the faculty time more efficiently. In total, there is one individual who is in a current position whose position is being eliminated, and we will work with that individual. There is no question in my mind that person would have another opportunity on campus at the same, you know, roughly same salary level and et cetera. I can't make any promises, but again, we're working these out. There's a couple things, and there's one line on here that we've presented to faculty senate leadership, staff congress leadership, through the budget advisory committee. There's one line at first was talked about as, wish you didn't have to do it, but I understand it. That line's come back, and it's something that it's causing a little bit more consternation than what was originally reported back to us. So we're going to take a look at it and find another source for that, and we'll move forward on that. And it basically has to deal with the KTRS ORP sick leave buyback. So we're going to reanalyze that and see what we can do. So again, this is a process that is still being worked on, being evaluated, being moved. We're putting all the things in place to see what we can do with it.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of work has been done to find nimble ways to find savings or create revenues or to establish something that could potentially create revenue in the future. Do you feel confident that the work being done on this budget could help alleviate pressures for future budgets to put Murray State in a good position to not have such looming or lingering concern over the campus community in the future years?
Yes, I do. I mean, I think we're being strategic on it. I think that we need to continue to be mindful of our budget. The biggest number, the most important number on this, to be honest, is enrollment. That $4.5 million decline is one that is looming and is important to think about and to deal with. And I've been asked a lot about that number. I mean, we are in an interesting position. We have this last freshman class was an uptick for Murray State University, 1,502 students. The number of transfers was also an uptick. And so people hear, well, we had this uptick. Why are you talking about declining enrollment? We need to remember that basically we're working in 4 and 5 year cycles. Imagine if you had a freshman class of 1,000, and let's say you had 1,000 freshmen a year and no one left, okay? Just to have this illustration. So you have 1,000 freshmen, 1,000 sophomores, 1,000 juniors, and 1,000 seniors. Again, this for this discussion, each student stays, each student grows, you know, does everything that they're supposed to do. It's an ideal world. So, you know, you get your freshman class of 1,000, those freshmen become sophomores, you bring another freshman class of 1,000, then the next year you got another freshman class of 1,000, those sophomores become juniors and et cetera. So you got 1,000 hold. So then let's say after 4 years, you got 4,000 students. The next year, let's say you have a class of 500 freshmen. So you have 500 freshmen, your freshmen previous 1,000 now are sophomores, and the 1,000 before are now juniors, and the juniors are now seniors. So now you have 500 freshmen, 1,000 sophomores, 1,000 juniors, 1,000 seniors, 3,500 students. So you went down 500, but your freshman class went down 500, so it's easily explainable. Let's say the next year, 500 freshmen again. So now you have 500 freshmen. Those past 500 freshmen are now sophomores. So you have 500 sophomores. And those sophomores, 1,000 sophomores are now juniors, and the 1,000 juniors are now seniors. So now you have 500, 500, 1,000, 1,000. You're at 3,000. You're down. But you know that because you had 500 freshmen for 2 years in a row. The following year, you have 1,000 freshmen. The previous 500 freshmen are now sophomores, so that's 500 sophomores. The previous sophomores are now juniors, that's 500, so you have 500 juniors. And now you have 1,000 seniors. You're still at 3,000, but you have a larger freshman class. Let's say the next year you have 1,000 new freshmen. 1,000 new freshmen, the previous 1,000 freshmen are now juniors, so 1,000. The sophomores are now juniors, that was 500. And the juniors that are now seniors, that's 500. You're still at 3,000. You're still at 3,000. So 2 years of increased freshman classes at 1,000, you're still at 3,000. Now the next year, bring in 1,000. Your 1,000 new freshmen, previous freshmen are now sophomores, 1,000. Your previous sophomores, which was 1,000, are now juniors. And then your previous juniors are now seniors, 500. So now you're back at 3,500. Then you bring back another 1,000 freshmen. Now you're back at 1,000, 1,000, 1,000, 1,000, 1,000. It takes 5 or 6 years. From the very first decline, it takes 6 years for that to work its way out through the system. And that's what we're involved in. If you look at our numbers that were just recently reported, we lost 490 students, if I'm not believed, from the previous year. Freshmen and sophomores are no difference. Where we see the difference is in our juniors and our seniors. Not that we have had more sophomores leave us, or not that we had more freshmen leave us. It is 6 years ago, we had a smaller, we had for 4 years, 5 years, we had increasing freshman classes, and then for 4 or 5 years, we had declining freshman classes. That is what's working its way through the system. And we're about 2 years out from completely negating that. That's why it's so important that we look at our freshman class and our transfers. Recruit and retain college-ready, college-able students, and we're going to be fine. 1502 this last year, higher GPA, higher ACT scores. Our retention from fall to spring of our freshman class went up significantly. The year before, we had the higher as well. The total retention from last year to this year for freshmen was 74%. The year before was at 70%, so we're actually increasing that. More and more students are coming in with dual credit. That's going to help us, again, move them through a little bit faster. 4 years ago, we had a smaller freshman class, and we also had lower retention. We tried to really to develop a larger freshman class, but we didn't hold to the standards. That's why it's important we went back to the standards that we are holding now. Next year's freshman class, we set a goal at 1,600. I think we're going to make it. It's going to be pretty close, but I think we're going to surpass it. We had our freshman orientation on Saturday, 279 new students, my new best friends. The day before, we had honors orientation, 175 students. Honors class last year, total was 160. They're looking to be at 200 this year. The next several orientations are sold out or booked up or whatever the term that they use. So we're going to see a lot of activity in that area. The percentage of applied and accepted students of this year over last year is up by 8%. Interestingly, where we're seeing a lot of our growth is in the Indiana and Illinois markets are growing significantly, as well as the Tennessee market. Our Missouri market right now is a little bit flat, and I think that's more of a timing issue. We kind of see those students come in a little bit later. But 20% out-of-state growth. I like that for two reasons. One, it brings in diversity of many different kinds, but also they pay more. And so when we talk about our revenues and we look at our mixes, that's a very important factor, is what is that mix? Out-of-state students also typically live in the residential halls longer, the 3 years, because of the regional discount. So that also helps us out financially as well. So a lot of good things. So when we look at the budget, when we look at the various things, I'm very optimistic. I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities for us to go forward. With this increase of 5%, again, I don't like increasing tuition. I wish we didn't have to, but it continues us to be positioned well. We will still be at the bottom end of the tuition market. Kentucky State is below us. Moorhead is below us by $2. And then there's Eastern Kentucky, which is ahead of us by about $450 to $500. Over time, I hope we're able to get a little bit distance between us and Moorhead and closer to Eastern Kentucky. I think it's important for multiple things, obviously financial, but also as we are able to provide more discounts and everything else, the net price will stay the same, but that the quality image is a very, very important factor.
There's a lot of local interest around the consideration of changing collegiate athletic conferences. When you were describing it at the Board of Regents meeting, you said opportunity and investment quite a bit. What are some of the specific opportunities for Murray State, and what are some of the investment costs?
Well, the specific opportunities for Murray State University is that to have a footprint, a geographic footprint of university, of our competitors, that matches our geographic footprint of our students coming to Murray State University, as well as our alumni. The Ohio Valley Conference provides that to a certain degree, but there are other conferences out there that are geographically suited and much better for us. We get most of our students from the Missouri, Indiana, Illinois area. We need to get into the Ohio Valley, the Ohio market, better. So that's an important factor. That is that if we are in those areas athletically, that provides us opportunities for marketing, that provides us opportunities for news coverage. 75% of the time a university is mentioned in a newspaper for positive things, it's through athletics. And I think that's an important note to have in there. The other part of that too, and this is a phrase that my grandmother always told me and my mother always told me, and it got picked up on Twitter over the weekend because I said it in the meeting, you are who you play with. Your characteristics, your what people think about you are who you play with. And if we are able to be in an athletic conference that is made up of top universities, if we're able to be in a conference that exudes academic integrity, that exudes academic prestige, all of a sudden you're being compared to a very different type of competitor. when students look at that, you know, they do ask, if you're going to play these certain teams, you must be like those universities. And if we're able to be in a conference where we're compared to the upper echelon of the universities within that particular geographic region, that makes a lot of difference. And so looking at that academic niche. Also our alumni footprint. Our alumni footprint is very much north of us. We do have obviously a lot in Nashville, and if we kind of have that market already, and I think if we did switch conferences, there are some natural rivalries that we will maintain. But if we're able to be at an upper level, an upper tier, be in areas where we're getting our students to be in areas more frequently where our alumni are, there are a lot of opportunities for leveraging those type of things. This is a transformation opportunity for our university on many, many different fronts. Do I think it will be immediate, the advantages of this? Do I think it will be immediate? No. Do I think it's going to be a long-term? Absolutely. Is it something that we should take seriously? No question about it. Over the last 2 years, through these budget cuts and everything else, you asked a question when we were on the budget. You know, does this position us well for the future? The budget does, but also the opportunities afforded us through Athletic Conference Association and affiliation does as well. Will it all of a sudden just give us 300 new students? No. But over time, it definitely will. It can and will change how we are viewed nationally as well as in the intense regional exposure. And I think that's also something that's very important as we analyze these type of things. These things occur gradually, but there are you can look at universities. You can look at, for example, James Madison in the impact that it had athletically on its university when it made the Final Four. Gonzaga is another wonderful example of taking a private university that had pretty good exposure within Washington, the state of Washington, a little bit into Oregon, but even into Nevada and California, it was lost among the mix. And then all of a sudden, it was able to impart on the national scene. It has dramatically increased its enrollment. It's met its enrollment goals. It still wants to be a small university, but the caliber of students, the ability to recruit, the ability to recruit faculty and staff has significantly increased. A university that I'm very familiar with is Boise State University. It was a metropolitan university in Boise, Idaho. Its recruiting base and student base really was a 150-mile radius around it. Was not known on the regional scene that much, definitely not on the national scene. It went from a low-level mid-major conference into the Western Athletic Conference, into the Big West, into the Western Athletic Conference, now into the Mountain West, and it has created a national following of many sorts. And that was done through football, and then also they were able to take those revenues and enhance their basketball, and now they're moving up as well. Again, athletically, they've done some great things, but more importantly, it's helped them in enrollment. Prior to those moves, they were a university of about 12,000 students, but with an FTE of about 6, a lot of part-timers. Now it's over 20,000, around 20,000, I do believe, headcount and a very high FTE ratio. It has created a national presence, and they were not at the top of their universities in the state. Now they are, almost in many cases, surpassing the land-grant institution and the flagship up north in Moscow. And so, again, a very different type of thing. The University of Buffalo, a phenomenal Research One university, a member of the AAU, American Association of Universities, was struggling within its own state where it was considered to be not even close to the upper tier. They started making investments and moved from a very small regional type of athletic conference into the MAC where they are now. And they saw enrollment changes. They saw fundraising changes. They have now escalated where they are the flagship of the SUNY system, and they compete against some of the privates in the New York State area for prestige and those type of things and those type of accolades. So, again, it's that leveraging type of opportunities. Other universities have tried it, and they failed. I won't say that it's a slam dunk. It's not one size fits all. I think that given the hard work of Alan Ward, given the dedication that we have from our vice presidents and our deans, we can definitely leverage this out. As I said at the Board of Regents meeting, we are an academic institution. We are here for the education. I see athletics as integrated into what we do and is a support level of what we do. And if we are able to leverage that by a new conference affiliation to enhance our efforts in recruiting, in recruiting not only students but faculty and staff, increase our national prestige, internet, and an intensified regional, I think that's something that we definitely have to look at. It is not free. There will be costs. Depending upon which conference and everything else, but on average, we would probably be looking at over time of an increased investment in athletics of $3.5 million to $4 million. Our facilities are stellar. We will not have to do any major facility increases or anything along those lines. We would not have to add any additional teams. And so, those are not the big costs. What the cost would be, it's primarily in travel and various things along those lines. Grant and aid is another one that we would have to increase. And to me, that's a opportunity as well as an expense. These would be scholarships that would be funded either through private gifts and or through the university. Most of the scholarships outside of football, basketball, men's, women's basketball are actually partials. And so you bring in a student, you're also getting some of the revenue. So that's why it's not only an expense, but there is also some change. But also, our student athletes, one of the reasons why I think we're being looked at, our student athletes graduated at a higher rate and quicker than our general student population. There's a diversity issue. There's a higher GPA issue. There's all those different types of things. And so those two add into this mix. If we get an invitation, we're going to take a look at it seriously. If we don't get an invitation, we will continue to be extremely competitive in the OVC, and we will continue to do the great things that we're doing.
Do you have any sense of a timeline on this, when things might move forward, and if there will be a special Board of Regents meeting?
I think that we will know kind of where we stand within the next 2 to 3 weeks. It's a very fluid movement. I will say that, the big rumor is the Missouri Valley Conference. But we've been contacted by several conferences over the last 6 months. So we're looking at all of them. Some of those discussions, to be honest, the switching of conferences would be wonderful for athletics, but it wouldn't enhance the university. It would not help us in the things that I just mentioned. And I'm not interested in that at all. I'm interested in advancing the university, and I see athletics as an important tool that can assist us with that. The Missouri Valley is very intriguing, but again, we don't have an invitation at our hand. If we do receive one, we will definitely highly consider it. There's other conferences, as I mentioned, that are very interested in Murray State University, and we'll take a look at those as well. But within the next 2 to 3 weeks, I think we'll know a little bit better of where we stand and those type of things.
Can you give me any update on the provost search?
Well, that's actually an excellent question, Matt. Just earlier today, we were able to release that Mark Arendt, as of last night, accepted my offer to be Murray State's newest provost. And I'm very excited about him joining the Murray State family, along with his family, or his wife Sandra, his sons Stephen and Caleb, and daughters Faith and Grace. Caleb's actually is a college student right now, so he won't be moving to Murray, but the others will. And again, we'll be welcoming them to our community with just open arms. I was extremely impressed through this process. First, the depth and breadth of the pool. We had amazing, outstanding applicants through this process. And Dr. Arendt just is the ideal fit. He brings a great sense of focus to the provost, a great sense of focus to our academic efforts. He's done an amazing job of creating a master plan for his current university, Northeastern State in Oklahoma, where he is a sitting provost, and has done that since 2014. So he's bringing that wealth of experience. I think he'll be able to immediately come to Murray State and begin to assume those duties and responsibilities of the position very, very quickly. The other thing that really impressed me with Dr. Arendt was his openness, his ability to communicate, his ability to engage others. I saw a lot of the references that were done by the search committee and by the search firm that we used for this process. But I also called a lot of people at Northeastern, talked to quite a few deans, talked to caught a few vice presidents, talked to the president of the university, and just the personality, just the characteristics, just the integrity that he brings. I know that he will do very, very well here. And then finally, this is a very important position for me. This is my partner. This is the individual that I will turn to help me lead the university on all fronts. And in our discussions that Mark and I have had over this time frame, we're on the same page. We see the academic excellence. We see the importance of the rigor. We see the importance of the relevance of the programs. We understand and agree to maintaining our national prestige and enhancing that. So I'm excited to end this process of the search. Now we're into the process of the transition, and I know that will go very well, very smoothly, and we'll just continue to move forward. Dr. Arendt will start his duties here on July the 1st. Again, I want to reach out and thank everyone that was involved. The search committee did yeoman's work. Those individuals that serve in interim roles, specifically Dr. Duncan and Dr. Pervine. Through this process, when you have an interim, you need individuals that will step up and take on some extra leadership responsibilities. And they did that. And I'm very, very appreciative for what they were able to do. And also other many members within the provost office that behind the scenes just made sure everything kept on working. So again, I really want to thank them. I'm sure they too are relieved that this process is over, and we will have the provost here full bore on July 1.
Dr. Davies, I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you. And I just want to say to all the faculty, staff, and students of Murray State University, we're 2 weeks away, and then finals week, and then we have graduation. This is a time of year when we get to celebrate Murray State University. We get to celebrate our faculty, our staff, and our students in all the accomplishments that we have made over the course of the academic year. Lots of opportunities to do that, but just finish strong, as they say. Bear down. We got those 2 weeks of classes, 1 week of finals, and then one of the happiest days on a college campus, graduation. And I know that we'll have an exciting time. With that, I want to thank all the faculty and staff and the students for an amazing academic year, for an amazing time with all of the accomplishments, with all of the support, with all the things that we are doing here at Murray State. You cannot help but be excited. Do we have challenges? Sure. We're dealing with a slight budget imbalance, but we've been able to navigate that, and we will continue to navigate that. There is clearly an upward trajectory in what we're doing, and I'm excited to be here. Just look forward to shaking lots of hands and congratulating everybody. With that, have a great day, and go Racers.